I happen to believe that it is Davos's plan, that their goal is to break the U.S. bond market in such a way that it forces a political fork in the road between basically red states and blue states. It has nothing to do with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is irrelevant to all of this. They hate Bitcoin, but they hate Bitcoin the same way they hate gold. They hate Bitcoin the same way they hate the dollar if they can't control it. If they can't control something, they hate it. And that's why we're being gaslit and saying the debt's not sustainable. Most Americans, back civil war now, blah, 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 blah. It's all bullshit. The truth of the matter is that if Trump gets into office, you think he's going to let California secede? You go f*** yourself. Like, that will not happen. Trump will just put that asshole in jail. Done.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, the man with the cigar, Tom Luongo, in the house. Tom, to start off the bat, man, we've had a shit ton of stuff happen since we last spoke. We've had a Trump attempt, and we've had global markets go all over the place. Hell, we even had Japan raise 25 basis points and seemingly break the stock market for like 5 hours. And then, yeah, so with all that being said, Tom, how are you? And how the hell do you think we got to where we are since last time we spoke, man?
Well, I mean, I hate to invoke Sheev Palpatine, but everything is proceeding as I have foreseen. Now, in broad strokes, like, it's hard to say, well, yeah, I got that wrong. Well, I didn't get that quite completely right, but you know, it's like, I keep going like, oh, well, there's a win. Like, and I don't care. Like, you know, I actually sadly, like, I'm like, oh, Christ, I'm right again. And I mean, like, you do one of those things and you're like, oh God, it's like the facepalm meme of, you know, Picard, right? Except when I do it, it looks more like a face hugger. There's way too many references all at once. It's been a long day and I'm going to probably be a little scatterbrained. I've already done like two different things today and I was on my best behavior this morning. So I don't plan on being on my best behavior now. How did we get to where we are? Everybody is running their playbook. Everybody has their incentives. Everybody has their thing that they're trying to protect, and they're acting accordingly, right? And so the key to getting all that right is to map, you know, what everybody's incentives are and get that done accurately. So were we shocked that they tried to take a pot shot at Donald Trump? Were we shocked that somehow the guy missed because of circumstance? Yes. Because, you know, I mean, this was a thing that, you know, was designed from the ground up to go off without a hitch, and then they had all their, you know, pollution of the information space all lined up, and then he didn't die. Right. And now we're in a kind of post assassination world where everybody can see that they took a pot shot at the president. And the only people who don't want to believe that act in and of itself was a bad thing, or people that are, you know, crying over the idea that Kamala Harris could be the first woman president, you know, crying tears of joy. I mean, right. But so I don't know. Like, so we have that. Trump chooses JD Vance as his running mate because, you know, I didn't see the PayPal mafia angle on that going up into the election or up until into the decision. And I probably should have, because Pete Quinones like warned me about it back in February. And I'm like, yeah, we'll see. But here we are. And then a few days later, they, execute a coup against Joe Biden, put in Kamala Harris. They had that all planned. Like, you know, all of the evidence after her ascension to the top of the Democratic Party, bears that out. Like, you don't get billboard contracts with and ads designed in 4 days put up all around the country saying, I voted for Trump twice, and my name is Danny, and I'm going to vote for Donald Trump, or my name is Barry, or my name is Jacinda, or whomever. And like, it doesn't work that way. Like, that's all bullshit. Like, those ads were designed 4 months ago or 6 months ago, and they were and those contracts were signed 4 months ago. And same thing with the signs. I mean, I have friends in town who told me that, you know, the day after she showed up, on the scene as the new, as the choice, that there were, you know, Kamala for president signs all over the city of Gainesville. Really? They just printed those up and got them distributed in 12 hours. I mean, even Amazon's not this efficient anymore. Like, come on. Like, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm not, I know you think I'm weird and I know you think I'm stupid and, you know, I know you think I breathe through my mouth and everything else, but I'm not any of those things. If anything, you're the one who is literal retard for thinking that I'm that freaking stupid. And everybody in the world is that freaking, we can't see you. Like, come on. Like, it's just pathetic. Like, this was an operation. We were a quarter of an inch away from having two people running for president that no one voted for. It was going to be Nikki Haley versus Kamala Harris or Hillary Clinton. Take your pick. And that's what we were going to have. And we're still 8 days out from the Democratic National Convention. And don't, you know, rule out something, you know, shenanigans happening there. Like, so I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, my base case is that it's going to be Trump versus Harris because that's their best chance of winning. Right. But, you know, never underestimate the power hungriness of Hillary Clinton and the people that back her. Right. Because nothing would make them even happier than to have even more chaos surrounding the election, right? Because that's their goal. Chaos is the plan. So, I don't know. Like, that's what I see. So, I think it's going to be Harris. I think they chose Walz because Walz will actually run the country because she's not capable of it. And, you know, this guy is a true believer in he's the perfect Davosian caretaker, like Keir Starmer in the UK, like Emmanuel Macron in France, like Ursula von der Leyen, like Kaya Kallas, all of these people over and over and over again. They're all cut from the same mold. And whose MO is it that, you know, people that nobody, the people didn't vote for, winds up running the country? Who does that? Davos. Who does that? They do it over and over and over again. And if you don't believe me, I take an hour and do a little bit of like research into the last 15 years of Italian politics or Greek politics or Dutch politics or French politics or just, I don't know, think about what happened with Marine Le Pen. She wins 99% of the precincts in the first round, and she comes in third in the second round. It's not what people want. They never get the government they want. That's the motto of the 21st century. You don't get the government you want. You get the government you deserve.
Well, is this basically like Davos' plan in your eyes? Like, was essentially taking out Trump or that aspect of it? Was it because Trump and his like new Bitcoin stance kind of seen as like maybe an attack on the dollar? Was there something like related to gold that they were coming at? Why attack Trump in this
war? It has nothing to do with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is irrelevant to all of this. Even gold in a lot of ways is irrelevant. But it's all about the debt, collateral, and war. You have a bunch of people that have promised their old feckless boomers across on both sides of the pond hundreds of trillions of dollars you can't pay in pensions, in UBI, and this, that, and everything else. And they can't pay it. They want to default on it. And the only way they default on it, this is Martin Armstrong's argument, not even mine. I just agree with him. I mean, the minute I heard it, I'm like, well, yeah, that's what they're going to do, is they're going to default on it all. And they need to have the war as the cover story for the default. Bitcoin is irrelevant to that part. I mean, it's strategically an interesting part of the process, depending on what scenario you're talking about for the future, but it's not germane to what's driving them. They hate Bitcoin, but they hate Bitcoin the same way they hate gold. Like, they hate Bitcoin the same way they hate the dollar. if they can't control it. If they can't control something, they hate it. Like, so they can't control the euro dollar market at this point because they don't have control of the Federal Reserve. When they had control of the euro dollar market, they loved the euro. They loved the dollar, right? They were even destroying the dollar in order to replace it with the euro. That's what they were doing. That's what Bernanke and Yellen's policies were. It's what QE and ZERP were all about. And I finally like put this all together about a month ago. I said, I'm sitting here doing one of my market reports for people. And I said, oh, right. How did I miss this? You built the dollar standard on the petrodollar system, right? Because if the oil is the collateral of the financial system, because without oil, there is no productivity. And without productivity, there's no debt. And without any no debt, there's no national currencies that governments can issue. So this whole thing, the whole financial system is built on a pile of collateral, and that collateral is your labor. Okay? Well, if you don't have energy to take advantage of that labor, then you have no collateral to pay the coupons on the bonds and roll the wealth of the world up through the interest rate arbitrage system to the top of the financial pyramid. That's exactly what's happened. That's what the era of central banks is all about. It's about rolling all the wealth of the world up into the upper 1% or 0.1% of the world, and then let them issue all their demands to their quislings and make the little people just do what they want. To them, we're just tax cows. Fine, that's what they think. But you have to have collateral, right? So you build the euro dollar. You build the euro dollar system during Bretton Woods, and then when Bretton Woods fails, you take the dollar off the gold, off of gold convertibility. You go into Milton Friedman's nightmares of competitive devaluation of currencies, but you control the price of U.S. dollars, and you do so through the London Interbank Offer Rate, right? You do it through having a Federal Reserve that asserts its dominance over the world during Paul Volcker's era, and then you run that. You know, there's a, let me put it this way. Volcker hits the peak of interest rates in 1983 and LIBOR is instantiated by 1984 and literally takes over the world within what, you know, and it took like 4 years, but LIBOR eventually became the world standard. So now you used oil to collateralize and create the dollar reserve standard. The petrodollar helped create the dollar reserve standard. Well, if you want to replace the dollar reserve standard with something else, well, what are you going to replace it with? Well, they want to replace it with the euro. So all of Europe's policy, all of our foreign policy, all of this idiotic regulation and OECD rules and all of this crap that we all look at and go, why are they doing this? This is stupid. It's like destroying people's lives. Like, yeah, it's all in service of bringing the United States comparative advantage down, making it equivalent to Europe, and then using U.S. policy to destroy itself, while Europe gets to recolonize all the oil producing countries of the world, because they don't produce any oil, they don't produce any gas, they buy it from everybody else. Well, they in order to run their shitty system, they need all of that collateral at pennies on the dollar. So, and the proof of what I'm saying is, now, this was the insight that I had it hit me like a ton of bricks. That's what they were doing. Was when I looked at what happened to the share of the market share of the euro in global trade outside of the eurozone, as it ran through the SWIFT system. You know, according to SWIFT's own data, from the moment up until the moment when the Russians put sanctions on Russia after invading Ukraine. And then a couple of months after that, when Russia then turned around and said, well, for all unfriendly countries, you can no longer give us dollars or euros or anything else. You can only give us rubles or gold for our oil, period, right? Well, what happened to the share of the euro as a percentage of global payments outside of the eurozone? It dropped from 35% to 13% in a year. So the nascent petro-euro was destroyed when Putin said, nope, can't, not taking euros. The minute he no longer took euros, no one would take euros for their oil. It was done. The Saudis stopped taking, I mean, the Saudis never really took euros for their oil, but you know, I understand any attempt. So what Europe was trying to do was to try and build that market share to then blackmail and put pressure on Saudi Arabia to break the petrodollar agreement, blah, 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 blah. The JCPOA was always about being able to get Europe access to Iranian oil and gas. The whole invasion of Syria was about bringing Saudi gas in through Turkey and up into Europe and to bypass Russia. Why the EU is frothing at the mouth about why Russia can't win in Ukraine, it's simply because they expected the United States to go over there, kick Putin's ass, and break Russia up into 200 countries and then steal all their oil, while at the same time destroying the United States from within by putting Joe Biden, the fucking mushroom president, in the White House. Like, and at some point, like, If I can see this, then guys like on fucking Wall Street and in the Mariner Eccles building and, like, you know, the guys who smoke more expensive cigars than I do and drink more expensive whiskey than I do are also they're going, yeah, we're not doing that. Like, where's our cut in this? It never made any sense. So how fragile this whole inevitability bullshit narrative that the EU projects around the world. We are insouciant, we are wise, we are inevitable, we are the EU. I mean, if you listen to these people talk, it's the way they act. Like, well, yeah, that's okay as long as the whole board has been tilted, you know, in your favor. But it doesn't work that way. It's like playing basketball on a court that's tilted like this. Like, yeah, okay, I'm not the basketball's a shitty game, so it's an even better metaphor for this. But, like, you know, come on. Like, that's what these people are. The minute you level the playing field even, like, 5 degrees, the whole freaking European Union concept collapses. And it's what you're seeing now. All Powell had to do was raise the Fed funds rate by 5 basis points 3 years ago. And all Putin had to do was say, yep, no, I'm not taking euros for oil. Done. Like, the European Union is just dead, is just dead political project walking at this point. But, you know, it's going to take some time for it to, like, fully fall apart. And I don't know but about you, but, like, it's like the best show on television right now. Until and unless we can get rid of these freaking vandals and traitors that are literally running the United States into the ground. And that's why they had to kill Trump. Because Trump represents the impulse to not do what Europe wants us to do. I'm sorry. I don't care. It's not, I mean, look, it's Europe. It's the old colonial empires of Europe. Doesn't matter what their ethnicity is. Yeah, some of them are Jews. Yeah, and some of them are just French. And some of them are Anglo-Saxon. And some of them are German. What a shock. Greed and the desire for political power and psychopathy isn't, like, you know, isn't monopolized by any one ethnicity. Really? Like, you know, there are plenty of Italians who are really shitty people too, by the way. Like, you know, they, you know, Club of Rome, Vatican, like, come on. It does, like I'm supposed to believe any of this? Come on. That's my problem with, like, a lot of the analysis, that everybody just wants to, like, default to one simple little thing, when the simplest thing imaginable is the thing that's staring you in the face, and that's 700 years worth of European colonialism. Of North Africa, of the Middle East, of the United, of North America, of Southeast Asia, of Russia, of Eastern Europe. Like, come on, it's everywhere. And these people always give themselves away. And, you know, and then I have to, like, sit there and I know that most of the people who do this stuff, who yell at me about this stuff, are bots. I get it. They're all AI. They all, you know, it all originates in the bowels of MI6 or CIA or wherever. Half of them are probably Mossad at this point. I really give a shit. But it doesn't matter. The matters is that they pollute the waters in order to destroy the validity of, you know, complex, nuanced conversation. And they just want to, you know, boil everything down to stupid fucking talking points and not actually, you know, and not actually have a conversation about anything. I mean, I know I've, like, you know, we're not having a conversation. I'm just filibustering into the microphone for 15 minutes, but you understand what I mean, right? So, like, but we should be having a conversation about that. So, you know, you ask, Brandon, how am I? Well, this is how I am. So
I love it.
The interview over. I think it's been an hour. I think I'm done now, right?
Yeah, you're always a firecracker, man. You're always bringing the heat. But you know, at a certain point, then you know, do you think that they're going to even let Trump win the election? Like, is that something that they're just going to bend over? Because at this point, right, they attempted the assassination. But if you look at the odds, the Vegas betting odds has Kamala already winning. And if you look at her website, she doesn't have a single policy up there. So I mean, like, Trump's kind of coming in and Kamala is like implementing a lot of the popular policies already, whether it's the border, no taxes on tips, those kind of things. So, you know, like, what's going on here from that perspective? Do you think that they're just going to, you know, keep Kamala in office? Are you looking for the best way to store your seed phrase? Well, I've got it for you. It's Stampseed. They've got the number one punch place where you can order a full-on package where they've got every single thing. They've got all the letters. You could just get it in there. And they've got this sick, sick hammer, which they've engineered to make it so easy for you to punch in that titanium steel plate and store your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. So go ahead and get your Bitcoin off of these exchanges and use promo code GREENCANDLE for 15% off. They're helping power their show. They've got the Bitcoin logo. You can punch it into your seed phrase as well. If you could see it here, they've got a lot of cool stuff. And now I'm helping empower you to get your Bitcoin off an exchange utilizing Stampseed and storing your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. Now get to it. All right, back to the show.
Nah, it's just plausible deniability that they go for the steal. Like, I think that the selection of Tim Walz was definitely a dog whistle saying, oh, by the way, we're going to steal Pennsylvania. Because we certainly don't need Tim Walz to take Minnesota, since Minnesota voted for Mondale. Okay. Like, and you know, I mean, everybody talks about California and New York being like shitlib central. I got news for you. Mondale country. These people voted for Walter Mondale. Like, oh my God. Half the guys in Deep Purple look like Walter Mondale. Every time I say his name, all I can think of is an old Joel Biafra routine. But folks, like, yeah, that's how far back my counterculture goes. I just invoked the Biafra. No, I think they're going to try and steal the election, obviously. But at the same time, I don't buy the Vegas betting odds, right? And I don't buy the polls. Like, you manufacture reality by doing Dem+8 and Dem+12 polls in order to create the plausible deniability that they can just print 5 million ballots and then dump them on the market. Like, I saw something the other day. Somebody finally said, look, by the way, they dumped 294,000 ballots in Michigan on the vote totals in 2020, on the eve of 2020. Well, yeah, in the election night of 2020, when all of the ballots in all of the ballot counting machines in all of, you know, in the counties could only process 94,000 or 93,000. Like, how is that? I mean, even if that number is not correct, even if they could process 150,000 or 180,000, there's a little bit of a discrepancy. You can't run that many ballots through the Scantron to get that many votes. Like, how did you do that? And how were every single solitary one of them Joe Biden's? Like, you mean, really? And you tell me that Putin runs an insecure election? Really? Okay, Mark Hamill, like, you know, okay. But if you want to believe that, then you're a crazy person. And we're not weird for, you know, doing math. We're not. You are, for even attempting to believe that you can convince us of this nonsense. Like, go smoke another friggin' joint, dude, and go sit down. You are only not allowed to get one vote, just like I am. And my vote doesn't even count. I live in Florida. Trump's gonna win Florida by 7 points. I could vote for the Libertarian. Yeah, God forbid. I could vote for my wife again for the third time in 5 election cycles. And, you know, she'd be a better president than all these fucking people. But, you know, whatever. She's not gonna win either. So, now, I have literally voted for my wife twice for president. Like, that's the ultimate libertarian stance on voting. No, fuck that. Vote for your wife. Like, you know, I know where my bread is buttered. Like, you know, and I happen to think that my wife would be a competent administrator, because she just look at all this shit and go, That's dumb. We're getting rid of that. What can I do to stop this? That? Cool. Here you go. And you know.
My, hey, she's got to put up with you.
This is, by the way, the woman who told me that. This is, by the way, the woman who turned to me one day when I just think while she was making eggs one day in like the mid-90s, and she was just thinking about it for a second. She just turned to me and goes, you know, I really think feminism has been bad for women. I'm like, you know, I guess the way the kids put it today, my wife's based. Like, when she... So again, like, you know, if you want an alternative to Trump or Kamala Harris, you want the first woman president, vote for Camille. She doesn't suck. You know, I mean, she's kind
and she's got to put up with you all the time too, Tom, right? So she's got to be pretty tolerant with all that stuff, right? I kid. But, you know, with all this,
no,
you know,
no, you're right. Like, but trust me on this one, you're right. She says this all the time. I put up with this asshole. Like, you know.
Exactly. But you mentioned the debt spiral and kind of like where we're going, right? And like getting the, I guess, like the Biden administration in office to essentially just like help speed up the demise of the U.S. Now, is there a way that you see us getting out of this, or is like, are we just spiraling out of control? Because I mean, you go to the debt calculator on the internet, you're going to get motion sickness seeing that number just continually spike up. So, you know, the way we're going, how are we going to see our way out of this?
Well, it all depends on what we. And again, it doesn't matter what we vote for. It's going to matter what votes they decide to count and who counts them. But we know what we're going to vote for, which is, you know, some relative value of fiscal temperance. The Federal Reserve has set things in motion to force the moment to its crisis, to quote T.S. Eliot. And only under a crisis period can a system actually reform. So we've moved to that moment. We're staring it in the face. And now everybody's being gaslit into believing, no, well, it's not possible for us to reform anything. So let's all be black-pilled and just, you know, pull out a fifth of whiskey, chuckle and collapsitarian and wait for the crash, right? I don't believe that. I know enough about the way capital flows around the world to know that it'll suck. I've lived through the 1970s. I watched it suck then. I watched it nearly destroy our family. I watched it destroy nearly everybody. And yet everybody made it through. I've watched the Russians rebuild themselves after the fall of the Soviet Union and the rape of Russia by Goldman Sachs and Bank of New York Mellon and JP Morgan and MI6 and everybody else in the 1990s under Yeltsin. And yet look at where Russia is today. Like, the idea that we cannot work our way out of this or alter the structure of our debts in such a way that we can't get out of it is stupid. Two reasons. First reason is the following. Who owes all that debt? People. Who wants to see that debt defaulted on? Nobody. The people who own it. So they, like, it's like every bankruptcy, right? Only government runs bankruptcies the way you watch them. When Greece went bankrupt, the European Union basically said, you owe us the money and we're going to restructure your debt in such a way that you're paying it off for the next 100 years and we own you, but you have to pay it. But, you know, we're going to give you a way of paying it back and you're going to pay back every penny and every penny of penalties and taxes and interest and everything else. And only governments act this way. Under normal bankruptcy, everybody goes, okay, how much can you pay? I know you owe $1,000, but how much can you actually pay? $200? Okay, fine. We'll freeze all the interest. We'll freeze this. We'll freeze that. Just pay me back the $1,000 when you can. And can you do $100 a month for the next 10 months? Okay, let's do that. And then we walk away. Because the debtor and the debtee have a vested interest in being not made whole, but made something, right? So it's not zero or whole. It's somewhere in between. When you owe the bank $1,000, and my previous example is bad, it's your problem. When you owe the bank $100 billion, it's the bank's problem. And so we owe $35 trillion. The world doesn't want to see us default on it. We'll have to figure out a way to write it down and revalue it. And how do you revalue it? Well, it's clear that the way you revalue that is by revaluing the value of the other assets on the the national balance sheet in such a way that they are more sustainable and more representative of the amount of debt that's out there. So you have 8,133.5 tons of gold. That's an asset that can be revalued up by some order of, by some multiple of the current price. You've got, you can put Bitcoin on the balance sheet and you can let it go to $1 million a coin. You can do this. There's ways of doing this. And you can, yes, you're going to have to means test and reform Social Security, Medicare. You're going to have to deregulate the medical industry. You're going to have to do a whole lot of things. You're going to have to cut spending. You're going to have to put government bureaucrats who are on UBI out of work. We're all against, you know, all conservatives and libertarians are against UBI. And yet they like, they're the same people who say, well, we can't cut government spending. GDP would contract. And then the bond market would collapse. And then I get that. But no, it really wouldn't. You cut spending. You put a whole bunch of people who are doing nothing jobs now, and you go out there and you make them go freaking find a way to pursue their bliss and make other people happy, i.e. commerce. And maybe, just maybe, we might, you know, muddle through this. Will the inflation be terrible? Yes. Will people lose their businesses? Yes. Will commercial real estate fucking vulture capitalists go out, you know, beyond the port, you know, go on beyond the soup kitchen lines? Oh, fuck yeah. And those are the ones screaming for Powell to pivot. The foreign governments that want to use our money levered up through the Eurodollar, through the shadow banking system, and then spend that money back over here to undermine our elections and tell us that, you know, we have to accept migrant trainees in our spare bedrooms. And give them $3,000 a month of my money at the same time. Those same fucking people are the ones that are also screaming about their commercial real estate holdings that they levered up to the tits in Manhattan and want to be made whole. Fuck you. You don't get that. You get to write that thing down by 97%. And you get to be poor because you made a bad bet. Now I'm just like, you know, Dave Kalman on this rant on Twitter this morning. I'm like, yep, no, Dave is absolutely right. Like, no, you made a bad bet. You get to be poor, and the money that is actually circulating through the economy for the people who are productive, you let them go make 5.25% on 3 month money. You can't make you're over levered at 5.25% on 3 month money. I'm so sorry. Too bad, so sad, motherfucker. Get out of here. Like, fuck, I mean, fuck off. That's exactly the problem here. Okay, the very ugly, horrible, horrific, friggin' technocratic pedophilic elites that are complaining, that are killing us all, are the ones screaming for Powell to pivot. And the useful idiots in FinTwit are running around going, yeah, well, the debt's kind of unsustainable. Yeah, because they can only do first order math. Like, did nobody ever take a calculus class? Like, really? Okay, you only took accounting. Okay, well, that's your problem. Because if the United States were to start the process of cutting the spending, figuring out a way to rejigger the coupon payments in such a way that we can, you know, pay it off over time. Again, I'm now going to invoke Judy Shelton and gold-backed tips and all that stuff. Look, if we can borrow money and pay it back in future gold and future gold repayment, which we're never going to pay off, obviously, but if we're not paying off the coupons, but the value of those bonds are going up because they're indexed to the price of gold, and we allow the price of gold to rise, now all of a sudden, all that debt is zero coupon debt. Huh, that changes the fiscal position of the United States a little bit, don't you think? Hey, and then another thing. You don't think that the world would look at us and go, hey, they're getting their fiscal house in order. Hey, they put Lindsey Graham in jail for being a war criminal. Hey, they did this. Hey, they did that. Hey, Hillary Clinton is literally on the streets with a friggin' tin cup going, you know, we'll start a war for money. We'll start a war for food. Like, you know, come on. Like, she and Victoria Nuland could be sitting there busking on, you know, with you know, playing bad versions of the Battle Hymn of the Republic and on, you know, Columbia University in the quad of Columbia University and making 20 cents. I don't give a shit, but that's what would happen. And you don't think the world would rejoice at this? And you don't think the world would go, hey, maybe the U.S. is an investable place. And trillions of dollars of capital that flowed out during the Eurodollar system flows right back the fuck in. And if you don't think that Jerome Powell and Jamie Dimon and John Solomon and John Williams at the New York Fed and all these people do not understand how to do this, you're out of your fucking minds. I am not the lunatic here. I'm the one literally telling you these men know how to make billions of dollars. These men know how to serve their customers, period. They know their business and they're good at it. And FYI, it's working. Because as my friend Alex Craner pointed out to me this morning in a thing we were doing together, so far this year, bank balance sheets have expanded by 2%, and they're on track to expand by 4% for the year. So that means the credit markets in the United States are expanding, not into commercial real estate, but they're expanding. Where are they expanding into? New small business ideas, new this, new that. Like the, it's happening. And if it wasn't, the bank's balance sheets would be contracting. So it's all bullshit. It's all gaslighting. And, you know, everybody has this. I mean, look, I'm a no fan of any of this shit. I'm just telling you what the world is. Like, do I want to be on the side of JP Morgan fucking Chase? No. Do I want to be on the side of the Federal Reserve? Fuck no. But I don't know. Do I want to be ruled by Christine Lagarde? Who make me eat broccoli? I don't want to eat broccoli. I don't like broccoli. I mean, as vegetables go, broccoli doesn't suck, but, you know, most of them just make me, you know, like we won't get into gastrointestinal distress on your podcast. You know, I won't invoke Dave Collum, who literally started like talking about his surgery, you know, the surgery mishaps the other day and how far he can pee now that he's had his prostate out the other day. It was hilarious, by the way. But I'm like, yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, there's a way out of this. It's not going to be easy and it's not going to be fun, but it's there. And I got news for you. The Fed is not alone. The Fed has a wingman. That wingman is the Bank of Japan. And the Bank of Japan just told everybody they're changing policy in a generational way. And you better buckle up, Buttercup, because it ain't going to be the bumpy ride. It ain't going to be the smooth ride you've had where you could buy cheap yen and go levered up around the world to go buy governments or dispose them or whatever. Those days are over.
Yeah, it seems like the generational run will continue, though. I mean, like with Powell here, you know, you've been on his back and on his side basically throughout this entire process with him keeping interest rates at a very high level. Now, right. It seems like they were calling for him to do an emergency rate cut. And it seems like that they're, you know, going to cut rates maybe here in September or by the end of the year. Who knows? But it seems like it's that is more on the table than it has been previously. So I'm curious where you think that Powell is going to go with this, because, you know, either way, it seems like if Trump gets into office, Trump is going to push him to lower interest rates. And it seems like the, you know, if Biden and that administration, the Harris administration gets into office, they're probably going to push him to do the same thing. And, you know, the Fed is supposed to be bipartisan, but are you looking for the easiest way to get your Bitcoin off an exchange? Well, I've got it for you. It's Foundation Devices. They've got the number one hardware wallet in the Passport. They've even got a concierge service that can help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange within 1 hour private onboarding session. And they've got a great app too, which will give you extremely, extremely, extremely private features on that app. So you can use Bitcoin in the most secure way possible. So I've been working hard trying to get sponsors to help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange. And I found it with Foundation. And you can store your seed phrase with a stamp seed punch plate as well. So pair all those together. Use promo code GREENCANDLE at foundation.xyz and you'll get $10 off your entire order. All right, that's enough for me. Back to the show. I mean, you know, he also wants to keep his job here.
So here's the gig. It's two things. Why do you think Jerome Powell is not going to cut interest rates before the election? I'm asking you the question.
I think that he's, well, I don't know about what you think, but I think that he's, yeah, I don't, I think he's not going to, or that he's going to, well, I don't know. I mean, it's tough to say. I think Trump wants.
It's strategic. It's strategic. It's simple. Ready? Do you think there's any love lost between the Biden administration and Jerome Powell? No, don't turn off your microphone. Answer the question.
Yes, I do think there is. Yeah, I do think that
you,
there is.
You think they like each other? You think they like each other? Okay, there is no love lost between the two of them because the Biden administration did what? Tried to keep Powell from getting reappointed. To put egg on his face for a year when he wanted to start raising interest rates in the middle of 2021, but he couldn't. So he raised the reverse repo payout rate by 5 basis points and drained the overseas dollar markets. When what he wanted to do was the shock and awe campaign then and start raising interest rates then and then move things up, but they couldn't do so. So that's number one. Number two, so do you think he wants Kamala Harris in office?
No, right. I would say no. Yeah, but
Okay. So now let me ask you the next question. I'll just keep this simple. Now, if he doesn't want Kamala Harris in office, is he gonna cut interest rates in September?
No, because he would want to cut interest rates when Trump is in office. So then, yeah. So I mean,
He'd want to cut interest rates in November or December if Trump was going to make it into the office, because depending on the results of the election, it would tell you whether or not he's going to be able to walk in with a mandate to cut spending. Remember, Powell has said explicitly that we have to get our fiscal house in order. And this is unprecedented from a Fed chair to get political, but he did so. He said, look, it's not my problem. He gets asked all the time, well, aren't you making it difficult for Janet Yellen to raise money and fund the budget deficit? And he's like, fiscal problems are the Treasury and Congress's problem. They aren't my problem. Translation, yeah, no, I'm not. I'm doing this on purpose. I want them to stop spending. So if Harris wins, don't expect any rate cuts. Expect him to say to the Democrats, oh, you hate my policies so much? End the Fed's charter, because you can't get rid of me for another year. Now, what the Democrats will do is more of what Janet Yellen's been doing, soft QE, yield curve control, undermine this policy, create liquidity. But all they're doing is accelerating the destruction of the United States and literally going to ensure that they are voted out of office, or that the United States doesn't survive. Now, maybe that's Davos's plan. I happen to believe that it is Davos's plan, that their goal is to break the U.S. bond market in such a way that it forces a political fork in the road between basically red states and blue states, right? And that's why we're being gaslit into saying the debt's not sustainable. Most Americans back civil war now, blah, 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 blah. It's all bullshit. Like, the truth of the matter is that they want to have it, as always, coming and going. They want both sides of it. They want to be able to say there's going to be a civil war. If Trump gets in office, there's going to be a civil war if Kamala Harris gets in office. Well, they're right about both of those things, except there's only one of those that actually matters. If Trump gets in office, you think he's going to let California secede? You go fuck yourself. Like, he'll have the fucking Marines in Gavin Newsom's office so goddamn fast that boy's hair will fall out of his head. Like, that will not happen. Trump will just put that asshole in jail. Done. If Ron DeSantis takes 37 states with him, what's Kamala Harris going to do? Nothing. He'll take 37 states and half of Canada. Hell, under those circumstances, Mexico will want to join. Like, are you kidding me? Like, is that air you think you're breathing? Like, this, it's all just such bullshit. So they're going to threaten us with this. They're going to threaten us with packing the court and removing the Fed's charter and all, and getting rid of Powell. They can't get rid of Powell without literally revoking the Fed's charter, which is why Powell will do everything he can to ensure that Harris doesn't win. So all calls for emergency rate cuts, yeah. Who do you think that was?
Yeah, I mean, I know that those calls were kind of full of shit too, because I mean, you saw what happened on Monday, right? I mean, like, although Japan like hiked interest rates and it sent everything down, if you look at it realistically, what, the S&P fell like 3%, Dow fell 8%, and then a rebound the next day. So, I mean, I know it sent like a shockwave, and it kind of, like you said, it was basically like a warning shot, but I mean, I think everybody else like initially took that warning shot, and some people were like ready to jump, get off of the ship.
As always, it's gaslighting, Brandon. It's just gaslighting. The reality is the following. It wasn't the interest rate rise that was really the big thing. Come on. The BOJ has been saying they're going to raise interest rates. And they already raised interest rates once from negative 0.1% to 0.1%, now to 0.25%. That's not the big deal. It's a little deal. It's the $40 billion in Forex reserves they dumped on the yen market that was 97% net short that did it. And they caused a cascading default across multiple asset classes. Now, there's this meme that's been promulgated by at least Zero Hedge, if not a lot of other people, that the Fed is always there to goose the stock market because, you know, that was Greenspan's policy, because that was Bernanke's policy, because that was Yellen's policy. And they keep thinking that, oh, well, Powell's always going to come in and the Fed put, he's going to go and keep pushing the stock market higher. The Fed does not do emergency rate cuts or alter monetary policy in any substantive way unless the Treasury market goes illiquid, not the stock market. Okay? Now, Greenspan was a pussy. In 1987, he did this. Alex Greenspan was a social climber. Fine. It was a different world back then than it is today. Powell is not cut from that cloth. But Powell's, that, you know, the onto to steel man my own argument, they're all Powell. They don't call him private equity Powell for nothing. He's going to bail out his private equity guys. Is he? They're the ones screaming the most. As Daniel DiMartino Butta said multiple times, he's like, those people keep calling Jay Powell up and he's just got them on ignore. They can't get it. They can't get him on the phone because he understands what he needs to do. This has to be dealt with. And so, you know, there are bigger fish to fry here than whether or not Paul Singer is going to be able to go, you know, pick up the pieces in Argentina for a third time and, you know, make money on selling the Argentinian bonds or whatever he's going to do. We're picking up pennies, picking up destroyed assets and then picking them up later on. They're not going to care anymore. That game is over. Okay. We have much bigger problems here. You've got an entire BRICS out there. You got an entire rest of the world that has a secondary payment system. They're all willing to use national currencies to settle trade and in the short term and then gold in the long term. Like, they don't need us anymore. They have a SWIFT system or multiple ones, replacements. They're out there. You've got the Turkish banking system has been laundering Iranian trade through their banks, you know, using gold as a settlement layer for 12 years now, 13 years now. Like, this is nothing. This isn't even new. Okay, like, it's a different world, and you can't go any further. They pushed it all the way to the end. They pushed it to the crisis point, and now we all have to decide what is more important to us. Do we want to have a society, or do we not want to have a society? Do we want to, you know, do we want it to all be one big struggle session all day long over whether or not we've genuflected enough in front of the latest training brigade or not? You know, that's it. And I think it's just, we, and I don't care if you don't like the idea of having to like lay down with the flea bitten dog. Like, you know, my latest way of looking at this is like, you don't like it, tough. Sometimes you got to make a deal with a dragon, you know, because there are two dragons, pick one. You can't breathe fire, so pick a dragon and hope he wins. Like, that's the reality of the situation. Like, I'm starting to write about Japan for this month's newsletter, and I'm like sitting here working up a variety of metaphors in this, and I look at Japan and I say to myself, Japan hates the fact that they're a colony of the United States. They always have. They're not stupid, though. Like, I can be a colony of the United States, or I can become a colony of China, or I can go back to being a colony of Britain, like, or the Russians can invade us, or what? I mean, we're Japan. We're a little volcanic island in the middle of the friggin' Pacific. You know, Like, be like Japan. Don't give a shit. Just wait it out. And so this is why I believe that the Fed, the Bank of Japan continues to be the Fed's wingman, always has. When we had globalists running the Fed, open globalists running the Fed, Bank of Japan did NERP and ZERP and QE and everything else. Now we have somebody literally trying to craft a rational domestic credit market in the United States. Japan's job, support that policy. Meanwhile, everybody else is cutting interest rates, trying to blackmail Powell into cutting as well. No, it's not working. And I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think Powell would like to just say, you know what? I'm not showing up for the next 9 meetings. 5.5%. 5.5%. Go deal with it. He came out the other day and said, we're nowhere near the neutral rate.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think inflation is, you know, under wraps yet either. And so, I mean, I think, you know, at this point, it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. But, you know, I guess it seems like the basically the options here are like, you know, times get a little bit tougher and aren't as, you know, peaches and daisies as, you know, maybe 2010 to 2020 with the interest rate environment so low that everything was just fabricated, or there's like, you know, a global recession at the foot. Do you think we're going to get to that almost like death and despair where things are just going to crash and shit's going to hit the fan here pretty soon? Or, you know, to kind of take down the U.S. as the global reserve power here? Are you looking for the best way to orange pill your friends and family? Well, I've got a way for you that's got a little bit of a nostalgia factor. I've got Bitcoin trading cards. They've got the Genesis pack. I've got an open pack right here sitting here where you can hand out a bunch of these cards with some great, great artwork. We've got tyranny. We've got fear, uncertainty, and doubt right here, the FUD card. So we've got a lot of great things to teach you a bunch of lessons about Bitcoin in the current space. And they've even got some cool things of cool people even doing some stuff in the Bitcoin space. I've got the Bitcoin racing card here, even signed by my boy, Chris Primetime McKenzie. So you can get all of that at btc-tc.com. Use promo code GREENCANDLE. You can get 10% off your entire order to orange pill your friends and family and collect some cool artwork of people that are doing some awesome stuff in the Bitcoin space and help spread that orange pill around the globe. All right, enough from me. Back to the show.
Well, the U.S., you have to argue, you have to like ask the basic question. Do you believe that the Fed still wants to manage the global reserve currency? What if they don't? What if they don't? What Powell is doing is simply the opening salvos in a very long, tortured process of ending the dollar reserve standard, but trying to do so with as little damage as possible and not have a world war in the process. Like if I were Fed chairman with everything that I know about how the world operates, and I don't know everything, but I have my, you know, but I have stayed at a Holiday Inn Express a couple of times in my life. So couldn't help that joke, dude. It was like staring me in the face. But if I were Fed chair and I was looking at the world as it, and I was looking at history and I was looking at how interest rate arbitrage and exchange rate arbitrage has moved the world in every previous crisis point going back 300 years, I'd be doing exactly what Powell's doing right now. If it were me, I'd be at 6%. But, you know, I'm not quibbling over 50 basis points, dude. I'm just not. But, and I would literally come out and I would just say, look, I know I'm supposed to give you, you know, an update every 8 weeks and the rationale as to why it is that I didn't cut rates. I didn't cut rates because I'm done with the volatility surrounding the expectations of the Federal Reserve. We're going to go back to no communications policy, a la the 70s. And we're going to hold interest rates at 5.5. But here's the last thing I'm going to say. If you want to know what I'm going to, how I'm going to answer you until the end of 2026, it'll be like this: not cutting rates until the end of 2026. 5.5%. But 5.5%. That's my answer. Go write it up however you want at the AP, at the Financial Times. I don't care what you say about me. I don't give a shit. And we're done. I'll come back in 6 weeks and I'm going to say the same thing. Five and a half. We decided to keep interest rates at 5.5%. Now I'll take your questions. 5.5%. Same answer. 5.5%. But are you going to cut 5.5%? What are you expecting? 5.5%. But sir, you need to know. No, I have told you everything you need to know. You have stability from the Fed. I am telling you what the cost of capital is going to be. I'm telling you what I think the cost of capital is in a neutral sense going forward. It's 5.5%. We'll talk about it in 2 years as to whether or not we need to move it to 5 or to 6. That's it. And the markets would literally rejoice if they knew that they could plan rationally around this. And if that's too tight, the SOFR market will tell me. But it's not telling me that. What's telling me that is a fucking traitorous friggin' Treasury Secretary who won't issue a goddamn 10-year bond. And then everybody has to go around and find tier one collateral, and there is none. So they keep bidding up these overvalued 10-year bonds that are 1.5 overvalued. Like, I'm sorry. Like, maybe the Fed should cut the 4.5%. I don't know. I don't even care. But if the Powell were just come out and just say that for the next year and a half, he'd be the greatest friggin' central banker in the history of the world. And they'll put his name on the Mariner, and they'll replace his name on the Mariner Eccles building with the Jerome Powell, because he will have saved the Federal Reserve. Now, I'm not saying that the Federal Reserve is an institution that needs to be saved. But, you know, thinking about things from the Federal Reserve's perspective, as an organization that wants to exist in perpetuity, you know, call Kamala Harris's bluff. Oh, and Elizabeth Warren's bluff. Call it. Let's see how far you get in the Senate with revoking the Fed's charter. I want to see you do that. Because that's real power. What these people have is not real power.
But yeah, I mean, I guess to your point, yeah, I mean, I guess I see the argument. And do you think that the Fed has almost been prepping us to not have the U.S. dollar as the global reserve currency? I mean, Powell's come out and said it, that, you know, there could be multiple global reserve currencies previously. So has this all been kind of like, I guess, prepping us for that? Essentially, you know, keeping the Fed around, but, you know, not making the dollar the global reserve currency?
No, I think that's just part of it. I think you've got to prep markets slowly but surely over time. Like, I just did a panel this morning about de-dollarization and the BRICS and everything else, and we all came to the same conclusion. It's a process. It's happening. It's a slow process because everybody's incentives, again, go back to what I said earlier about debtors and debtees. Like, no one wants the world to shift over on Thursday to China running the world, the global reserve currency, the global reserve. Like, no, like, it's too distressing. It's just too much shock. It's too much awe. Like, go back to Ron Paul running for president in 2008 and 2012, where he said, yeah, I want to end the Fed. Yeah, I want to do away with this. Yeah, I want to do away with Medicare and Social Security and this, that, and everything else. But we made promises to these people. And the first thing we're going to do is try and make good on those promises as best we can. And the same thing goes here. We have to find our way through this by doing as little harm as possible. Unfortunately, things are so bad that what looks like a little harm, as little harm as possible, is going to be fucking devastating to a lot of people. I mean, please don't misunderstand me that I'm like, you know, sucking the Fed's cock or nothing, because I'm not. I literally am just saying, from their perspective, this is what they have to do to survive. And if they want to, in order to survive and be the currency issuer for the United States of America, which is an unearned but unbelievable fucking privilege, you don't squander that. Unless, of course, the people who run the Federal Reserve or were placed in charge of the Federal Reserve were people who hate the Federal Reserve and want to transfer its power to some other institution, which is what we all have grown up under. And so we're having a hard time understanding, you know, it's like It's been so long since we had a president that actually gave a fuck about America. We don't believe that they're capable of it. Same thing with Fed chairman. Same thing with senators and congressmen and all the rest of it. It's everybody's so freaking cynical about everything. And with good cause. I'm not saying you're wrong to be cynical about this stuff. If anybody listening to me, you're right. You have every right to be. But that doesn't mean that you take your cynicism and then apply it to people who have incentives. Because their incentives could match up with your incentives for a little while. And if so, you should cheer them on. Because you're getting what you want. You're getting a higher cost of capital, return on your savings, and a transfer of wealth away from the vulture capitalists back to Main Street. It's not happening quickly. Yeah, the vulture capitalists, the ones who aren't over-levered, are making fabulous amounts of money. Like Warren Buffett, he's making a fabulous amount of money on three-month T-bills. Of course he is. But Warren Buffett was also smart enough not to engage in leverage on his way up. So the ones who levered up are the ones screaming, the ones who use the yen carry trade, the ones who use the dollar carry trade throughout the 2010s. Remember, Bernanke and Yellen made the U.S. dollar the ultimate carry currency, better than the yen. The yen had to go to negative interest rates in order to outdo the Fed at 0.25% or zero bound, right? In order to attract capital into Europe, the European Union had to go to negative 0.6% to keep capital to keep money flowing, keep the flows flowing. Like it, you know, in order to attract, you know, a carry trade, and no one was making any money; they were just losing money slower. So now we're in a positive interest rate environment, maybe not positive real yields. I'm not talking about real yields here. I'm just talking about this, and that's better than losing 6 or 7% a year to real inflation in a commodity sense, and insurance and education and healthcare and this, that, and everything else has been rising easily 6-7% a year. Fuck, I don't give a crap if yacht prices are falling and that's attenuating the CPI. Fuck that. My insurance goes up 5% every year. I care about that. Be it house, homeowners, health, whatever. Like that's real inflation. Those are real costs. Those are real services that are getting more expensive. I don't know. Last time I checked, I didn't see the price of a Big Mac go down during negative interest rates or zero-bound interest rates. And inflation was supposedly tamed. Bullshit. What I saw was the 99-cent value menu at Wendy's getting showing less and less and less food. That's what I saw. Right? So the wealth transfer has maximized itself. The people screaming today about the Fed cutting interest rates are the ones literally saying, we want to continue to extract wealth from you. They're the ones who now have to pay because they earned that wealth through leverage, and they're getting fucked for it. And it couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of vampires, emotional or otherwise. I will smoke my next cigar in honor of their demise. And that's what the Fed's doing. I mean, and that doesn't mean that there aren't people making money in this scenario who are oligarchs. There are. There's nothing you can do about it. No policy is perfect. If you want perfection, retreat into your world. Go watch something on Pornhub. And remember that it's all fake because those aren't real tits. That's not a real ass. And the stripper doesn't love you.
There we go, Tom. Tom, with a firecracker of an ending here. Tom, you always bring the heat. So why don't you tell people, you know, where they can find you and where they could, learn more about your content and the great stuff you're putting out for everybody to learn about your thesis and everything like that.
You can find me over at goldghostsandguns.com. You can find me over at my Twitter feed at TFL1728. And of course, you can sign up with the Patreon at patreon.com/goldghostsandguns. I do something like this along with technical analysis of important markets on a twice weekly basis. I put out private audio content and private blog posts And of course, the monthly newsletter where I give you, you know, we do our best to look ahead and give you a portfolio strategy that makes sense. And, you know, we run a private chat server and all the rest of it. And, you know, you guys keep me in, and a lot of people keep me in cigars, whiskey, and invective. So I have to, you know, I have to applaud them for it. And good ideas as well, which is the amazing part about how this has all worked out. I never want to ever not give credit to the community who's constantly coming up with very, very good ideas, constantly bringing good information to me to help me, you know, present to you as entertainingly as possible that which I, you know, that which I think this week. But it is what it is. Like it's everything's a moving target. But as I said at the beginning, this is laying out exactly as I'll be honest with you, as I hoped. And, you know, if I had mapped it out properly, which I said 3 years ago, well, then this is where we're going to end up. And this is exactly where we've ended up. I've not been right about everything. I mean, I fully expected Trump to win in 2020, and he did, but he didn't. Right. So there it is. We'll see what happens in 2024. If Kamala Harris wins, it's the end of the United States, and, you know, whatever, it's fine. You know, house prices in Florida will double again. There's your investing tip of the day.
There we go. Awesome. Great stuff from Tom. And yeah, I'll put all that in the show notes. So everybody should check that out. And Tom, thanks so much, man.
Thank you, Brandon. Thank you, Brandon. And we'll talk again soon.
Thank you for tuning into the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guest. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.